From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. What's it like to sound the alarm? To be screaming at the top of your lungs, trying to convince people that something really bad is about to happen. Something so bad, people just don't even want to see it coming. Reporter Mark Schlefstein knows that feeling. Back in 2002, he co-wrote a series of stories that made some dire predictions.
Thousands will drown while trapped in homes or cars by rising water. Others will be washed away or crushed by debris. Survivors will end up trapped on roofs, in buildings, or on high ground surrounded by water, with no means of escape and little food or fresh water, perhaps for several days.
Those are some pretty drastic claims to make. People trapped without food or water in modern-day America? It seemed impossible. When Mark pitched the story, not all of his editors were convinced.
At that original meeting, one of our editors leaned back in his chair and said, well, you know, this is just more Schlefstein's disaster porn. And I said, well, you know, like real pornography, it's in the eye of the beholder, and there are 100,000 people who live in the city of New Orleans who don't have cars who might want to know that there really are no plans to get them out of the city, which there weren't at that time.
You've probably already guessed, we're talking about a major hurricane devastating New Orleans. When Hurricane Katrina hit the city in August of 2005, the predictions Mark made in the Times-Picayune 3 years earlier started coming true on TV.
By boat and by helicopter, rescue teams work today to get people still trapped in their attics or on their rooftops to safety. Hundreds of people have been stranded this way. Dead bodies float by as crews look for the survivors.
Amid this maelstrom, the estimated 200,000 or more people left behind in an evacuation will be struggling to survive.
They got children out here. They got pregnant women out here. They won't even bring water.
Whoever remained in the city would be at grave risk. Tens of thousands more would be stranded on rooftops and high ground, awaiting rescue that could take days or longer.
These people are very desperate. I saw two gentlemen die in front of me because of dehydration. I saw a baby near death.
Hundreds of thousands would be left homeless, and it would take months to dry out the area and begin to make it livable. But there wouldn't be much for residents to come home to. The local economy would be in ruins.
The city is essentially cut off. One runway opened at the airport, but highways and roads remain impassable. Supplies are running short, so are tempers. The scope of the disaster, murky yesterday, is much clearer tonight.
Twin spans are down, the bridges are down. There's no electricity, phone lines are down. Cellular phone lines are down. There's no way of us getting in contact with any of our families, friends, or anybody that's left behind. Out of those casualties, we don't know who's hurt, who's if they're related to us or what. We just can't, we're gonna be here, whether we like it or not, because we can't take any road home. There's trees, the causeway is no more. It's gone.
After Katrina, Mark was treated like a diviner.
It makes me look like Nostradamus.
But the real scary thing is that Hurricane Katrina's wrath wasn't the worst the Gulf could dish out to New Orleans. Most of the flooding didn't happen because the water went over the levees. It was because the levees breached. Huge gaps opened in the system of flood walls that was supposed to protect the Big Easy. The storm didn't even make a direct hit on the city.
If Katrina had made a direct hit on the city of New Orleans, and we had been in the eastern half of the storm, the storm surge would have been 28 to 32 feet above sea level. That would have overtopped every single levee in the city. The entire city would be completely underwater by 20 feet. You know, that my predictions were about the big one, and Katrina wasn't the big one. The Katrina was a storm that should not have caused the flooding that occurred.
Even with people like Mark Schlefstein ringing the alarm, it can be easy for people to ignore the warnings of officials. If you live on a gulf or a place that has storms all the time, you can be lulled into a false sense of security. After living in Florida most of my life, I get it. Every year, my little city seems to miss the big one. So the idea of a massive storm hitting just sounds like a lot of worrying for no reason. But a big storm coming isn't a possibility, it's a probability. Take the Houston area, for example. A hurricane makes landfall there every 8 years on average, and every 15 years, that hurricane is a major one. When Hurricane Ike came through in 2008, it caused $30 billion in damage and killed dozens of people. It could have been worse if it hit Houston head-on. Instead, it turned at the last minute. If Ike hadn't turned away, scientists and some public officials say thousands would have lost their lives, and there would have been ripple effects through the national economy, because Houston is an industrial and oil hub with a huge international port. So if it were shut down, the whole country would see higher gas prices, and the cost would go up on practically anything that has plastic in it, everything from car tires to Tupperware. So what if the big one really hits? What could happen? Journalists from the Texas Tribune and ProPublica teamed up to find out. They got some pretty sophisticated storm models from the scientists at the University of Texas at Austin and Jackson State University, and they used some hefty supercomputers to simulate what could happen if the Houston area was hit with a massive storm. One of those storm models was called Mighty Ike, and it happens like this. Mighty Ike forms as a huge cyclone in the ocean. It's so powerful, it's pushing all this water in front of it. So much so that 12 hours before the storm reaches the coast, Galveston Island is already completely underwater. Almost 50,000 people live there. When the storm makes landfall, the real storm surge hits, which means rising water meets hurricane-force winds. Imagine a shallow pan of water that's already overflowing. Then get a leaf blower and blow it across. The first place that leaf blower points is west, towards Clear Lake, a narrow body of water on the coast that runs a few miles inland. That is where we find Reveal's Nina Satija. Hi, Nina.
Hey, Al.
Okay, so tell me about Clear Lake.
So as you said, Clear Lake's a body of water, but it's also what people call a bunch of communities that are clustered around suburban Houston. More than 150,000 people live here, and the population's growing. We wanted to see what Mighty Ike could do to this area, so we went on a tour with someone who lives there, Sam Brody.
You ready, Fuzz?
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
Sam's not just a resident. He's also an expert in flood planning. And Fuzz is what he likes to call my microphone.
Sorry, Fuzzy. We're gonna call him Fuzzy.
That's cool.
I think my stand-up comic routine is probably not my strong one.
Sam moved here after Hurricane Ike. He works for Texas A&M University, and they wanted him to move here to study the area's vulnerability to flooding. Kind of funny for a guy who knows all about flood risk to move somewhere that floods a lot. But he loves it here.
My research is better because I every day I see these communities and I'm part of a larger body of people working on these issues. It's better for my kids and my family. Every weekend we go to Houston and we do stuff.
Sam's wife and two kids are happy here. Good schools, nice neighbors, and the restaurants are great.
I've always wanted to go there. Ramen bar. That's a really good Italian restaurant right there.
Here's the thing, though. Sam knows Mighty Ike, or a storm like it, is coming. And Mighty Ike will pummel some of these low-lying neighborhoods we're driving through with more than 25 feet of water. Even much higher elevation points could see 8 feet or more.
It's gonna happen one day. It's gonna happen. Even without the increasing models that account for climate change and more severe storms, even without that,
thousands of homes and businesses in Clear Lake are in deep trouble in Mighty Ike. That Italian restaurant that Sam likes, the area around it could see 6 feet of water. For some perspective there, I'm 5'3", so I'd basically be swimming. Sam took us to see houses that are standing on stilts 10 feet off the ground. But if Mighty Ike hit, people living there wouldn't be safe, not even on the second floor.
This sounds just like Katrina, with people trapped in their homes, climbing onto roofs. So, Nina, if folks know this is a hurricane-prone area, why aren't they more concerned about this?
Well, people know there's always a chance for hurricanes, but they don't seem to know how bad it could get in a storm like Mighty Ike. And most of the time, life is fine. I mean, picture this. You get to live by this gorgeous lake and marina. It's peaceful and quiet, but not too far from the bustle of downtown Houston. You've got a couple of major medical centers here, and you've got NASA's Johnson Space Center.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds nice, but what about the potential flooding?
Yeah, that's not something people really talk about. I mean, no one's crossing their lawn saying to their neighbor, "Hey, I've worked it out. We'll only have an inch of water inside when the big one comes." The communities clustered around Clear Lake have actually been some of the fastest growing in the country. And since Hurricane Ike, tens of thousands of people have moved here. And a lot of them aren't coming from the coast. They've never seen a hurricane. This is how Sam sees it.
So you're a professional. You moved to this area. And you're like, cool, I have a water view. I'm sure there's going to be some kind of boat launch.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great place to be. The last thing you think about is 20 feet of water coming up here.
To put that into perspective, think about it this way. It only takes 18 inches of water to float a car. So drive a modern car into 18 inches of water, and that force is enough to lift the car up off the ground and send it rushing off. Think about what even a few feet could do. That's why Sam was so careful when he bought a home here. He looked at the exact elevation, and he looked at all the flood defenses, from big to small. It's how he chose the block he lives on.
Did you purposely choose one next to the big storm drain?
Maybe. We're gonna go in.
The land behind Sam's house slopes way down to the water below, and the whole neighborhood's been raised several feet. In Mighty Ike, his house gets a couple inches of water. Not catastrophic. But
do you think that the new developments that are being built in this area, do you think that those developers are as responsible as...
No. No.
Sam drove us to a place called Nassau Bay Town Square. It's this new commercial development in Clear Lake. It's got a bunch of shops, an apartment complex, a hotel, and some offices.
And I can just tell the place is going underwater.
Under something like 6 feet of water, according to the computer models. Sam says the buildings might stay standing, but...
they'd be catastrophically damaged. It'd be a total loss. You know, you may have a structure, but it's not usable.
Any cars in the parking lot here would be goners. They'd turn into floating barges that ram into other things.
This is going to be a shopping center one day. And so we're going to add more people and more structures and more pavement. And so we have a decision that we can say, okay, if we're going to do that, can we do it differently? Does that make sense? Can we understand the risk better and have models like this? Like, hey, look, here could be under 8 feet of water. I would be shocked if the developers of that shopping center knew that when they put that in.
So what did the developers have to say? I mean, do they even know that this can happen?
So I called the developer of that shopping center, and he had no idea how high the water could get. He was kind of shocked. Because Nassau Bay Town Square is following the rules. It's up to code. It follows the local flood planning regulations. Those regulations just aren't designed to protect buildings from something like Mighty Ike. And the developer doesn't think they should be. Neither does this guy.
Bob Mitchell, president of the Bay Area Houston Economic Partnership.
Bob works in Nassau Bay Town Square, and his group recruits businesses to come to the Houston area. And he's pretty good at it.
We have 46 aerospace companies that are members. We have, 8 or 10 specialty chemical companies, 17 different banks.
If Mighty Ike hits, Bob knows what it does to his office.
It's underwater.
It's underwater. It's underwater.
That. Trust me, I know that.
Why keep expanding this development if...
I can't believe that's a serious question.
Why? Why does that sound such a...
Well, you're going to stop development? I mean, that's the same thing. There's no... That question you're asking me is no different than the terrorists right now. Am I going to stop everything I do because I'm worried about somebody going to charge into a store and shoot the place up?
That sums up the attitude a lot of people have. How do I know which impending catastrophe I should worry about? But there's no way of predicting when the next mass shooting is likely to happen or where. And we do know that the Houston area gets a major hurricane every 15 years. Bob said that himself a few minutes later.
Look at the statistics, okay? I mean, every 15 years, we have a major Category 4 or 5 hit this region. So what are the odds? You know, one of these days, we're going to have a major catastrophe.
Bob doesn't think we should stop building because of the threat of Mighty Ike. He wants to start building something else, some kind of floodgate or levee system to protect Houston, and he's been arguing for one for years. But that type of thing might take decades to plan and build. Sam Brody wants to change things before then. Otherwise, it might be too late.
Bob has a terrific organization that serves a great purpose, and he's well positioned here, and the rent is such that it makes sense. And it makes sense until some kind of disaster happens.
More than 160,000 people live around Clear Lake. That number is growing every year. And more people are moving in who've never seen a hurricane. In fact, many didn't evacuate this area during Hurricane Ike, even when the National Weather Service said they might die if they stayed. If the storm hadn't turned at the last minute, a lot of people would probably have died in Clear Lake and Galveston. Even Bob Mitchell agrees.
I hate fear, but I'm going to tell you something. There would have been thousands of deaths. Thousands. I can assure you of that.
That's a pretty dire prediction. But the damage to homes and even the loss of life, that's just the beginning. When we come back, we're going to follow the path of Mighty Ike to Houston's industrial complex, where there's another risk sitting on the waterfront. Billions of gallons of oil and dangerous chemicals in huge tanks. You're listening to Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.